In a moment, we are going to talk with a doctor, PhD type, about the paranormal. Timeless, a paranormal personal history next on Coast to Coast AM. I'm looking forward to this tonight. Dr. Bruce Olav Solheim, PhD, served in the U.S. Army as a jail guard, later as a helicopter pilot. He earned his PhD in history from Bowling State University back in 1993. Bruce is currently a distinguished professor of history at Citrus College in California. He also served as a Fulbright professor back in 2003 at the University of Tromsø in northern Norway. Bruce founded the Veterans Program at Citrus College and co-founded the Boots to Books Transition Course. Now, that's the first college course in the country designed specifically for recently returned veterans. Bruce, first of all, I want to thank you for that and for serving, my friend. I really appreciate that.
Well, yeah, thank you very much. And, thank you for having me on the program. I love this show.
I'm looking forward to this. You got to tell me. I mean, with the incredible background that you have in so many different things, how did you get interested and involved in the paranormal?
Well, the paranormal's been happening to me my whole life. It started at age 4 with my first paranormal experience. It was an angelic experience, a near-death experience. And just from that point on, these things have been happening randomly, but quite frequently. And I've always had it on the back burner. I've been doing all these other things and have a lot of different interests. And it's always been on the back burner, but it wasn't until recently that I decided to finally put all these experiences together into a book and then start talking openly, not just with a couple friends or family members, but to students. And actually I teach a class now at the college on the paranormal that's been very popular. Just started this semester.
A lot of people, Bruce, are a little hesitant to come out and talk about their paranormal experiences. Some of them, pilots, they don't want to talk about UFO experiences. Has this been a problem for you since you've come out and talked about this?
It hasn't been. I understand the nervousness or the fear even that they would have of it. I was afraid of that, that maybe people wouldn't take my work seriously, or that I'd be ridiculed, or the administration would find a way to maybe I'd get an early retirement or something. But I haven't found that to be true at all. I think what has happened is that people now see me as a safe person to share their experiences with, and they often do so privately. Some of them, actually, I have two colleagues that are taking the paranormal class that I'm teaching, two of my colleagues at the college. So it's been a very positive experience. I guess the most negative thing I can think about, there was a friend of mine, her daughter's a graduate student in history, and she told her mother that, I think he's just committed academic suicide. But that was the perspective of a graduate student. I can understand that. You're just starting out in your doctoral program. That's something you probably don't want to tell your graduate advisor.
As it's happening now, Bruce, and as you probably know, the field of the paranormal and the activities and the studies, it's really growing now, isn't it?
I believe it is, and it's gaining acceptance. And it's always had... In the scientific community, of which I have friends in the scientific community. I'm a social scientist, a historian, from what I gather, there's always been a tremendous interest in the scientific community, but a reluctance to do much with it. In fact, I think my friend Dean Radin, who's the chief scientist at IONS,
good guy.
He said there's 17,500 institutions of higher learning in the world, and there's only 50 academics openly interested in studying psi, and some of those are skeptics. So that's a very small percentage, 50 out of at 17,500 schools or colleges and universities. And from what he told me, there's only 5 or 6 paranormal courses being offered in the United States right now, which is very surprising.
At one point, Duke University had a department that studied all of this under J.B. Rhine, and now it's not there anymore, but there is still the J.B. Rhine Institute, thank God, to study some of these things.
Yeah. No, I think there is, and I confirmed this with Dean, because he's doing, and you know, he's traveling around the world talking about his research and very actively engaged in his research. And there seems to be, and I suggested to him, there seems to be like a paradigm shift going on of gaining acceptance. And I think people are increasingly, you know, professional people are increasingly supporting the research and talking about their experiences more openly.
Well, and I look at this program, you know, 620 radio stations we're on, we're podcasting, we're on the internet. There are other podcasters out there dealing with the paranormal, millions of listeners. It's growing. It's getting bigger and bigger. And I think people, Bruce, are looking for answers that they can't find in other traditional places.
I think you're right. And that's exactly what I've seen as people have come forward, you know, colleagues, and I've made contacts with our custodial staff at that work at the college at night, and they have incredible stories that I just it's kind of blown me away, and I never would have known unless somebody had said, oh, you should talk to you know, Mr. D or whatever. He works in this building at night, and he's got some stories. So it's like they're telling their friends, who are then calling me and saying, hey, I got something I want to share with you. So I think I think once more people in positions of authority or you know, academics or professional people express their interest and their support, I think it's gonna spread a lot faster.
Well, with Bruce Olav Solheim, his latest book is called Timeless, A Paranormal Personal History. He relates 34 issues and cases that he had, and just an incredible thing, because in the beginning you say that it's not that you don't believe in ghosts, they believe in you. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I think that, well, in fact, it's my spirit friends who I do have contact with. They told me that experience is believing and believing is experience. So this initial experience I had at age 4 kind of opened the floodgates for me. And even though I tried to every once in a while put it on the back burner because I didn't seem to have much control, it just happened randomly, these things, it just kept coming back. So they just kept coming back instead of, regardless of whether I wanted it to or not. And then I just kind of accepted this is the way my life is going to be. And I just proceeded doing other things, but it was always there in the background. I think I was always destined to explore this at a certain point in my life. And in the last couple of years, that has been the point at which to do this.
Bruce, when did you have, if you can remember, your first paranormal experience? How old were you?
Yeah, I was very young. I was 4, but I was, we had traveled to northern Norway to an island 200 miles above the Arctic Circle. My parents are from northern Norway, from that island. And we were staying with my grandmother lived there about 9 months. It was a winter time, and I was playing outside, and I remember very distinctly what was going on. And I got very sick very suddenly. My body was getting stiff and achy. I couldn't move my head from side to side. My neck was totally stiff. I had this fever coming on, and I went home, and I got home to the old farmhouse we were staying, my grandmother's home, and she had this little bed in the kitchen, in the old farmhouse kitchen, because sometimes she would, you know, she'd be baking for a long time and just wanted to take a little nap, and it was too hard to go up the steep stairs to the upper part of the house. So anyway, I was lying down there, and I just kept feeling worse and worse, and the relatives came over, and they said, oh, this is what happened to your eldest brother. And then the next day he died. And somebody said, oh, and that's what happened to Uncle Sven when he got polio, you know, and they were just scaring the heck out of me and my parents and my grandmother. And so I drifted off to sleep, crying myself to sleep. I thought I was going to die. And then in the night, I woke up, and there was this really bright light up in the ceiling in between the beams in this old farmhouse kitchen, and I felt like it was an angelic presence.
Mm-hmm.
It was very bright. It was very warm. I felt like everything was going to be okay. It took away all my fear, and I went to sleep, and I slept soundly. And when I woke up, I was completely fine. And my mother and my grandmother said it was a miracle, and that it was a guardian angel that had saved me. So So that was the first experience, and I never questioned it. I just said, okay, that's what happens, and I think that's what opened the floodgates. And also, my mother was very psychic too. She wasn't a practicing psychic,
right?
But she
there seems to be somebody in the family who has this ability, and it kind of passes down genetically, doesn't it?
I believe it does, because her mother was also that way. She was an herbalist. She was a healer. So, and this is a very remote island. At that point in the 60s, the only way onto the island was by a small plane or by a ferry or boat. There was no bridge yet to that island. So it was very remote. There's no hospital. So, they needed the services of folk healers, and that's what my grandmother did, my mother's mother.
Where does science fit into this, Bruce? I mean, you're in academia. Where does science fit in?
Well, I've been doing a lot of reading and I'm not a scientist, but I've done a lot of reading in quantum physics, and I talk a lot to I have communication with folks that have passed on, and that happened randomly before, but now I've figured out a way to make it more regular. But so I've asked an awful lot of questions, and I've done a lot of reading, and I've met people like Dean Radin, who are just wonderful and very easy to talk to and explain difficult things. And from what I understand, what I believe is that the paranormal world is actually the quantum world. So by studying quantum mechanics and how that works, I think I have a good idea of how the paranormal world works. And I've come up with a model, how I fit in what I understand to be going on.
Tell us what that model might be.
Well, the idea is I'll look at it this way. So in the morning, I take these, I call them meditative walks. So when I'm walking, one way of looking at me is that I'm a particle being. I'm a being, a physical being. But if you see that I'm moving, and if you look at like in fast motion or whatever, I would be like a blur. So I'm a wave more than I am a particle being. And my location is not just in one place. So I kind of see that in the quantum world, that's what it is. Everything is in wave form. And we don't see the world that way because, it's in the subatomic world. But if you take it up to the macroscopic world and you think about that, that I'm not in any one location. And that's kind of how I see it. And I think that helps me understand how this works. And the other thing is these near-death experiences that I've had. Like, for instance, I think we have many forks in what I call forks in the road of time. I talk about that in the book, where we experience maybe a near-death experience or a close call, and I've had a couple of those. And in one dimension, I think this is where it comes into, different dimensions, I think that we might die in that particular thing, that incident. And in others, we live on as if that didn't happen. And sometimes we have knowledge of what the incident might have been, or maybe sometimes we don't. And then we can have many of these forks in the road of time throughout our lives and keep going from one life to the next. But at the same time that we're doing that, there's this spiritual part of us. So there's actually two parts. There's the physical form, and then there's the spiritual form that is eternal. And that's where I come up with the title of the book, which is Timeless, that we don't really ever die.
And in Timeless, you have documented 34 paranormal cases that happened to you. Have there been more? You just didn't put them all in the book?
Yeah, there's a lot more, and I've already written the second book. It'll come out next year. I call it Timeless Deja Vu, and I have 28 more experiences, and I kind of wanted to test the waters with the first book. So
okay.
I saved some of the more, I'll just say a little bit more bizarre stuff for the second book based on the reaction of the first one.
Well, sounds like we're going to have you back about the same time next year, huh?
And I plan to release it about, the late summer, early fall. And, And then I also have a third book planned too. So I there's a lot of it, the incidents, they keep happening.
I was going to ask you about deja vu, because, and we'll save a lot of it for the next book, but you had mentioned the experiences where, you know, you may have died in one life but not in another. Do you think that sometimes we might have memory of other existences in other parallel universes, and that's why we have deja vu?
I believe so. In fact, I remember as a kid, and this is interesting because I think children are very open to the spirit world or the paranormal world, but that's kind of over the years, it's kind of through our education system, or sometimes maybe by their parents or different organizations, it's kind of drained out of them. But I remember as a kid thinking, I wonder if I've already died and I'm somebody else now. I think I am. And I don't necessarily remember a previous life experience from that, but I remember thinking that a lot. I mean, a lot. And so I think that's interesting that children have those kinds of feelings. But I'll give you an incident that happened just recently with me and my son. We were driving here in Southern California on some surface streets, and I looked down just momentarily. I don't know what it was. Something had dropped onto the floor of my truck or whatever, and I looked up, and when I looked up, and I thought it was just a split second, here I was hurtling through a red light.
Oh!
And it was terrible.
How old's the son?
He's 18.
Okay.
And he's sitting in the passenger seat and
freaking out.
He is. And we're going through the intersection, and on either side of us is a car, two cars coming right at us. So what was going to happen that I can see was that we were going to get T-boned from both sides and just, pinched between the two. At that moment, everything slowed down. Everything slowed down. And it was as if I had all the time in the world to figure out how I was going to
maneuver your way around. Huh?
Yeah. And the next thing I know, I maneuvered through. And next thing I know, we were on the other side. There was honking going on, and the cars went, and everybody was safe. And time got back to normal speed again. And I think what happens is that we had glimpsed the quantum world at that point. And in the quantum world and in the paranormal world, as my spirit friends have told me, there is no past, there's no future, it's all just an eternal now. And that's what I felt like. And then I thought, this is an example of a fork in the road of time, because in another dimension, which we might have had this horrible accident, who knows, it potentially, at least the potential, 45 miles an hour coming at each other like that, that there could have been people killed, and it's at least seriously injured, and we were unscathed, and so were the other two cars, thank God. But so I that is what I'm talking about. And I've had other experiences that, when I was younger, I at 8 years old, I had another experience where I was playing around. It was in up at Deception Pass. I'm from Washington State, and Deception Pass in the north end of Whidbey Island, there's two bridge spans that go from the mainland to Whidbey Island, the north end, and there's a middle island called Pass Island, and we always used to stop there when we went camping, and we'd run around, and it was beautiful. You could overlook the narrow channels that separate the island from the mainland, and I was running around, and of course, in those days, the early 60s, there were no safety fences or guardrails to speak of for the
people. Exactly.
And I was running right towards the cliff, and I remember running off of the cliff, and then everything was, I was just like suspended in midair. It was like everything stopped, and once again I felt this light and this warmth, and the next thing I knew, it was like everything had stopped, and then all of a sudden, boom, like in fast motion, I was back on the trail, and my dad was grabbing my shoulders and was yelling at me.
Somebody's watching you, Bruce. There's some helpers out there for you. I want to come back in a moment. We'll talk more about some of these other 33 experiences you had. Are any of them demonic? We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. We're back with Bruce Olav Solheim. His book is called Timeless. Bruce, what about any demonic situations? Have you stumbled into that?
Yes, unfortunately,
Oh, boy.
that is also out there in the paranormal world, in the spirit world, and
Sure is.
These things, as far as I understand, have never been human, never will be human, but they are very real and very scary. I'll tell you, there's a couple of them. One of them was when I was about 18 years old. I was in a very low place in my life, very down. I was not very successful. I dropped out of school. Out of the University of Washington. I was living in my brother's garage, sleeping on the concrete floor on a mattress. And the night before this incident happened, I had cut across, you know, I was 18, but I was still acting like I was a little kid. I'd still cut across yards and jump fences and stuff, because just to, you know, because I, it just that old habit.
Yeah.
Anyway, I went through the yard of an old lady who all of us in the neighborhood thought she was a witch. And she lived alone, and there was a story, I don't know if it was true, that her husband had died and she left him there for a month until the neighbors complained that, you know, there was something, some kind of odd smell. And then anyway, so her legend grew by leaps and bounds. So I was cutting through her yard, and I saw a candlelight in the window. And I just momentarily looked, and there she was. And she was a very scary-looking person. She had, you know, this gray hair that was kind of shooting off in all directions.
Yeah.
She had this.
She had the old hag syndrome, right?
Yes, she had the ulcerous cancer, as it turned out, cancerous sore on her nose. And,
oh, God.
And she had me. I felt like a deer in the headlights. I was just frozen, and I was just staring at her. And she had, it was either, it was a candle. Yeah, she had a candle in the window. And she was just staring at me, and it just scared me. And finally, I broke away from her gaze, and I ran to my brother's garage, and I you know, went into to I fell asleep. Well, later that, probably early in the morning, I woke up to a very frightening sight. At the foot of the mattress bed that I was sleeping on the floor, there was like a column of fire that was coming up out of the floor, and I thought, this is the worst dream. This is a horrible dream. And so I pinched myself, I slapped myself, and no, I was awake. And this column of fire then spread over me in an arc from foot over my head, you know, probably 6 feet in the air and kind of like an arc, and like pulsating fire, like a current of fire going over my head. And if that wasn't scary enough, there was also this very, what I would classify as a demonic, low, growly voice speaking in just these guttural tones. And I'm not sure how long it lasted. It might have just been a couple minutes, but it seemed like it took forever. And it was very, very frightening, and it was horrible. And after it was over, I was, you know, my heart rate was way up. I was sweating. I immediately called my girlfriend, and I told her, you know, that something terrible had happened. She said, well, you know, why don't you come over in the morning? And I did, and I explained it to her, and she looked at me, and she said, well, you know, I think maybe we should call a psychiatrist. What do you think? And I said, well, just forget it. You know, maybe I just made it up. But of course, I didn't. It,
right.
It did happen. And I think it had something to do with this old lady. I think that I had frightened her or made her angry, and something had been summoned. And it was a terrible, terrible thing. And that's one of the experiences I've had. It's one of the most scary things that's ever happened to me. And just as I'd remember it as if it would just happened yesterday. I could feel the heat. I could hear that growly voice that just seemed to fill the whole room. And yeah, it was horrible.
Wouldn't want to go through that again, would you?
No, it was very real, too real. And nothing so I think what happens is that these kinds of things know when you're at the lowest point in your life, and that's when you're susceptible. And I think that they seize that opportunity.
I think so too. I mean, they know when you're down, they know when you're on drugs or you're drunk.
Yeah.
And that's when they get you, and they get you a good time. I don't want to dwell too much on the demons, but tell us the other story.
Well, the other one, also a foolish kind of thing. There was actually I was in Germany. I was a soldier in Germany working at the prison, the military prison in Mannheim, West Germany, when it was East and West Germany. We were in West Germany. And there was a counselor at the prison, of all people, a counselor who's like a senior NCO, and he was into witchcraft. So So he had invited me and my girlfriend to his room to, because he was bragging about what a, you know, powerful warlock or witch or whatever that he was. And at the time I was kind of, well, I'm kind of interested. I'm kind of, you know, skeptical, but interested. So we went in there into his room, and he had this very frightening setup, you know, very typical Satan worshiping kind of stuff, upside down cross, a goat's head kind of thing going on, and candles and that stuff. So I said, well, I don't think this is anything that I'm interested in. And I got my girlfriend and we left, and he was being very, very spooky and very scary about this whole thing. So I decided that I was going to look into, this kind of thing. So I thought maybe as a defense, you know, maybe I should try to one up him, you know, and try to scare him or something. And I also felt like maybe he was trying to move in on my girlfriend too. So I had a little bit of that, you know, kind of thing going on, competitive thing. So I went to the, for soldiers, they had, art rooms or like arts and crafts areas. There was a ceramics instructor there, and I asked, I'd like to, you know, do something with some clay. And he said, gave me some clay. And I had been looking at a demonology book he had a demonology book. That's what it was. And I was fashioning what I thought would be, you know, some kind of scary looking head. And it would turned out to be a demon head I had fashioned. And this was just, you know, very stupid to be doing this. And as I was doing this, this guy took notice of me, this instructor, and he had this demonology book. And he said, you know, I'm very interested in this. What is this you're doing? And I said, well, I'm just trying to make this scary looking head to scare this guy. And he said, well, that's very, very interesting. You know, I'm very interested in demonology. And he started to get really strange, you know, just like the counselor at the prison. He was acting very strange, like they were maybe birds of a feather or something. So I finished this demon head and I got out of there, and I took it back to the barracks, and I took it to my girlfriend's room, and she wasn't there at the time, but her girlfriend, roommate let me in, and I set it up on her nightstand, and there was like this mirror behind it. And I said, okay, I'm going to freak her out, and then I'm going to freak her out, and then we're going to go and freak out this other guy and get him to get away from us. So I set up these candles around it. Stupid, right?
The intent was good, right?
It was maybe a good intent, but it was playing with stuff I didn't understand. So I'm sitting there looking at it, and the girlfriend left. The roommate left, and I was just there by myself, sitting there staring at this thing. All of a sudden, its lips started to move, and it started to say things in that same kind of guttural voice that I had heard before I had joined the army, in that other incident that I told you about. And it was pretty scary. And I thought at first, this isn't real, but then it kept happening. And then my girlfriend walked in, and she immediately said, what are you doing? And I said, well, your roommate let me in. And then she says, what is that? And she pointed to it. And I said, oh, that's this thing I made to scare this counselor guy. And she said, that's very interesting, because when I was when I was in high school, I made something that looked exactly like that, and I had to throw it away because it started to interact with me. And I said, well, that's what this did, you know. And she freaked out. She grabbed it. She opened up the window, and from the third floor, she threw it out the window into the dumpster that was down in the parking lot. And she said, you don't ever play around with that kind of stuff. And so that was the other kind of demonic incident that I had. So the big lesson there is, don't play around with things you don't understand, even if the intention might be good or somewhat good. These are forces that you don't want to play around with. And if you are at a low point or you invite them in, that's when you can have trouble.
You think you invite them in with a Ouija board?
Oh, I don't play around with Ouija boards at all. I think they're very dangerous.
Me either. You had a 9/11 premonition, didn't you?
Yeah, it was interesting. I was in Norfolk at the biggest naval base in the world in Norfolk, Naval Station Norfolk, with two other professors. And we were experimenting with doing distance education for the Navy. And eventually we did get a part of a Navy contract to do that. But on this particular day, it was the morning of 9/11, before everything happened, early morning. I had had a nightmare. I woke up from a nightmare early in the morning, and in this nightmare, the whole world was shaking. It was like the earth was seizing, like a horrible earthquake, but, you know, there were fissures in the ground and you couldn't stand up. It was so bad. And mountains were crumbling and the sky was turning a dark color. And it was just like an end of the world kind of apocalyptic scenario. And I woke up in a sweat and nervous and scared. And I went to breakfast with my friends, or just like a continental breakfast, and I told them about this nightmare. And then we proceeded to the base, and we were on a tour when the sirens went off and they closed off the base, and we went back to the education center and saw what was happening on 9/11. So that was my my precognitive or premonition dream. It wasn't specifically about airplanes or buildings, but it certainly was a very apocalyptic event that or life changing and world changing event. And later I learned that there were many people around the world who had nightmares, some much more specific than mine, but that very morning that this happened.
So yeah. there is my daughter had one of those too. We didn't know exactly. Yeah, we didn't know what it was, Bruce, but she had the vision. She was in a city where ash was falling down on her. She said it was about a foot deep. But you know, then like a day later it happened, and she said that was it.
Yeah. Some people had it that morning, some people had it a few days before or the day before. But there's so many people around the world who have verified that this happened to them, and so there is something to that. That people had sensed that and on a massive scale. So it's been studied. I think Dean Radin talks about it in one of his books. I can't remember which one of his books, but yeah, he does talk about that.
What do you think of telepathy?
I think I've had experience with telepathy with my mother, and she was very psychic. And we used to just a regular deck of playing cards when I was younger, camping on the Oregon coast. We'd have wonderful camping trips on the Oregon coast. And at night, my mom would bring out the deck of cards, and we would try to read each other's minds. So she would send. You know, she'd have a card, she'd look at it and send me try to send me with what the card was. And well above chance, we would get the suit, right? We would get sometimes the number or the whether it was a king or a jack, a face card. Very often we'd get it right, to the point where it would make my dad upset, because he was a very practical carpenter, a blue-collar guy, no nonsense, and he'd let us do it for a while, and then once we had got a few hits, he'd say, okay, that's it, stop it.
No more, yeah.
He did. He said, when Dad said stop it, we had to stop. And my mom, you know, so I had a special kind of relationship with my mom dealing with that, and she's the one that I think really cultivated it, and I that's where I got it from. It wasn't from my dad. I got the storytelling thing from my dad. That's how I ended up being a history teacher, but I think I got the psychic stuff from my mom.
Did you have a Bigfoot experience?
I did. I think it was. I'll tell you this. It was near Oreck, which is in Northern California on the Redwoods Highway there, and driving south. And my girlfriend was asleep in the passenger seat, and it was dark, and we were driving through, you know, the big tall trees. It's very dark. And as I was making, I think it was the road kind of veered to the left a little bit, all of a sudden, right on the edge of the road, like with its feet on the pavement, was this very tall creature. And it was hairy, and it was very dark, but it was definitely a living creature. And it was wearing, of all things, it was wearing a hat. And it was just kind of leaning into the truck as we drove by, and it couldn't have been more than, you know, maybe a foot away from the, you know, my side view mirror as I drove by. And immediately I woke up my girlfriend and I said, I think I just saw Bigfoot. And she said, what? What are you talking about, Bigfoot? I said, well, I think I saw you. I'm going to turn around and go back. And then she said, no, that's okay. Just keep driving. And I said, well, we got to find a hotel. There's one here another mile from here. And she goes, no, you keep going. You keep going. And so we kept driving. But later, I found out that that particular location near Oreck was only, I think, about 10 miles away from the location where that one of the most famous Bigfoot videos is from.
The Patterson-Gimlin.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
We'll be talking about that this week, as a matter of fact.
There's been more sightings there than any other place in the United States, as far as I understand, from what the reading that I did about it. So now, if it was a hoax, this guy's taken a big chance by staying right on the edge of the highway in the dark, total dark.
Yep. They could get shot at or anything. Jeez.
Shot, run over, crazy, you know, whatever. Or, you know, the alternative, which you know. So that was my one and only Bigfoot experience.
What of all the 34 episodes that occurred with you, which is the favorite for you?
Well,
the one you actually liked.
Yeah, I'll have to say all the connections with my parents, with my mother. When my mother came to me in a vision after she had passed away, and told me she doesn't say much when she comes to me, but she came to me and said, and she was golden. You know, she was herself, but very healthy. She had died of cancer, and she was very healthy looking. She was golden, had this golden glow. And she came to me and said, you know, there is a heaven. That's what she told me. And then that was it. That was one appearance. So that's
where she was. That's always a good thing. Bruce, stay with us. We're going to take a moment for a quick break, but we're going to come back and talk more about Timeless, your paranormal stories, and we'll open up the phone lines. We'll share some other paranormal stories with you, or just ask you a question or two about the paranormal world. Bruce's website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We will be right back with your calls.